When the final whistle went on Reading's opening day game against Sheffield Wednesday on Saturday, it was like 3 whole months never happened as the Royals crashed to a 3-1 defeat in a very worrying start to the season. Or was it? For those joining us for the first time in a new campaign, we at the Tylehurst End seek to provide some perspective and reasoned analysis amid the chaos and fervour that make up Reading Football Club. Sadly, with episode 197 being delivered by myself, Mark Mayo and Westy, well, reasoned analysis, Westy, have we got some of that in us today?
I don't think anyone give me that memo about reasoned analysis. What did this happen? What have I ever been reasoned?
Well, a 3-1 defeat, it was that sort of situation where that all the hype and everything, all those moments of thinking that maybe we have built a good team and so maybe it's just the sort of social media sort of sense that some fans have that every signing is a great step in the right direction. And we play a team that hasn't really made any signings and it just reminds us that we still have a long way to go.
Do you know what? I made the age-old mistake that I've been making for the last, 35 years now of supporting Reading FC. When I went into the new season, we're full of hope and optimism. And I come out feeling exactly the same as I have done for the last 2 or 3 seasons. Demoralised by the fact that they've been beaten 3-1 at home. I don't know about you, Mark, but I was looking forward to the start of the season for that crushing blow to be dealt as it was. It's put things in perspective, I think.
Yeah, it does. It is a healthy dose of reality, isn't it, when it comes to a team like Sheffield Wednesday, who, oddly enough, a lot of people were predicting to do quite well when I checked across the sort of the pundits' predictions and whatnot, and I couldn't see it myself. So, you know, 3-1 defeat. Yes, obviously the third goal you can probably put down the context of, generally speaking, the fact we lumped everyone up the pitch, but they had 10 men and everything. So we'll jump into the recap then and decide exactly what went wrong.
The Tylehurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetylehurstend.com.
So, Westy, to define this game, I've kind of gone with sloppy play in general. I kind of think we, you know, the missed chances really stick in my mind, but as we were talking just a minute ago off there, that you feel like we didn't really create too many chances, and then we managed to combine that with some just pretty weak defending, which we'll get on into in a bit of detail in a minute, but just a generally sort of sloppy start to the season.
I think generally, I think it was more sort of sorcerers versus the apprentices. I think Sheffield Wednesday looked like a championship side that have been doing it for many years with a lot of players that have been in and around it for a long time. I mean, I thought Fletcher up front would have easily walked into our team. I think he held the ball well. He pushed defenders around. He chased defenders when they had the ball. Barry Banham, I think we know all about, has been a great player at this level. And I'm still surprised that he didn't sort of make it more in the Premier League during his career, because he knows how to play the midfield role. And I think he could have taught, well, would have taught our younger players some valuable lessons during that game, because what he done and what Fletcher done just showed that sometimes having some experience in the more attacking areas can pay dividends in this division.
It's funny, just to skip towards the end of the game on that point, Charlie Adam came off the bench for Reading in his first start, or first appearance rather, and generally got some pretty good reviews.
Well, I'll tell you what, Mark, I didn't realise how big Charlie Adam is as a man. I mean, he's just a big all-round... I thought he was quite a short player. I mean,
as a unit.
Yeah, I've never seen him played live, I don't think, and he just surprised me how big he was. I think his head probably has got his own gravitational pull. He was just not only an influence of being a big sort of character and a good player, he taught some of the younger players how to play midfield, and you could see his mobility is not the best. And you'd hope that the fact that Reading have got so many young midfielders will be of help to him, because he can play that sort of quarterback role. But certainly when he came on, he made a massive difference. Now, whether he can do that over 90 minutes, only time will tell. But from judging by Saturday's game, he'd have to be one of the first picks on the team sheet.
Yeah, weirdly enough, we never really signed him with that ambition. And two of the players that we have as probably the first two names on the team sheet towards the end of last season were Moore and Rinomoto, and those two, certainly Moore, didn't cover themselves in glory for the first goal. Yao Virginia, the young keeper, starting his first competitive game in goal as well, didn't really cover himself in glory for the first goal. And I mean, it probably set us back quite a lot, that first goal, but the second, obviously again, That was a huge blow because we literally just equalised. And the defending, you can put pretty much put those two goals together as examples of our defending just being so far off the standard that's required.
Yeah, and it was, again, it was a concern that this happened a lot last year throughout the season, that when Reading did try or manage to get themselves back into games within 5 minutes, or in this case, not even 5 minutes, they were pegged back again. And it was a shame because the crowd had just got behind Reading. And at that stage, you'd have had to have made Reading's favourite to go on and win the game, because obviously the crowd were up, Sheffield Wednesday were a bit deflated. And then within, a minute, 2 minutes, they'd gone down the other end. Guy's completely unmarked and heads in from 8 yards. And you think to yourself, come on, Reading, surely you must have learned these lessons from last year. But this is the concern of having such a young side, that they are learning while they're playing, and without sort of more experienced players in that team, they could continue to struggle out all season.
Yeah, I've still no idea how their main centre-back goes into the box so freely for the second goal. And the third, just a brief word on that, because I do think it kind of, you know, it only happens in that context of the game. It's a good finish, and Matt Miazga certainly looks a bit flat-footed. It kind of looks like he's made to look like a player who's not really had a pre-season in that goal. So that I'm probably just about happy to write off and focus on the first two. But as we said, Reading did get back into the game, and it was a decent goal. Josh Barrett with some excellent patience on the edge of the area. Good ball in, good Mate header. And generally speaking, that was kind of the only, you know, one of the only chances we did create, certainly clear-cut chances, other than early in the first half, there was a handball shout on the line, ignored. You can pause the replays for yourself and decide whether the Sheffield Wednesday player completely got away with that one, but Mo Barrow did miss the rebound. And ultimately, again, Sheffield Wednesday did eventually fall down to 10 men when their keeper was sent off for the last 10 minutes. So Reading finding themselves in good positions, and that sort of clinical edge that certainly top flight teams, championship teams generally lack, and Reading are probably one of the worst teams at the moment to rely on to have that.
I just think, I mean, looking at the game as it was, he started Barrett and Loader on the wings, and he had Barrow and Mate up front. That didn't work. Loader, again, I'm loath to have a go at him because obviously he's only 18 years old, but he's had a lot of starts now in the championship, and he's obviously been quite key in pre-season, but I don't know what his strengths are. I think he's been played out of position for one, but even when he goes up front, I don't see where, you know what I mean? I don't see that he's a Michael Owen type striker where you can put the ball over the top and he's lightning quick. He's certainly not a player that can hold the ball well. He's not particularly strong in the air. I think from his under-23s days, you'd have to say, well, he must be a bit of a poacher. And I know he scored a good goal against Middlesbrough, but one good goal doesn't make you a good player. I think maybe this starting in the team has come a bit early for him, basically because obviously we had a lot of injuries last year, he wasn't scoring goals. But to play him out of position and then switch him and put him up front, and then Barrett, again, they've done the same thing with Barrett. They started him wide. I thought he was a passenger for the first half. Again, maybe I'm a bit harsh here, but I didn't see what he contributed to the side. Yes, he set up the goal, but again, one good pass doesn't make you a good player. And then they swapped him over. They kept swapping him over. Mate, he just frustrates me. And again, I know he scored, but for a guy who's big, as strong as he is, he should be doing more when he's put up front, if that makes sense. Like Oliveira would hold the ball for you. Mate doesn't do that very well. And if you looked at the other end of the pitch where Fletcher had done it excellently, you thought that's what you should be doing when you're playing up front. Because again, Mate, he's getting amongst the goals and you can't knock him. He's certainly improving. But when he's up front, he needs to do more for me. And again, Barrow, you know what you get with him. You get a player that's all pace. And like I said about Nathan Tyson years ago, all pace and no brain. Sometimes he makes poor decisions. And again, the guy that scored their first goal, he run Yidam absolutely ragged in that first half. And but again, you can see why he's a championship winger, because again, when he got in good positions, he tended to make poor decisions. And I think all over the pitch, Reading were doing that. And attacking wise, we looked weak, and certainly midfield, they won the midfield battle all over. And again, it weren't until Jerry Allen came on that he made a difference. But still, if you're relying on a 33-year-old sort of old stager, then I think that is a concern.
It's something for me to, or something that I picked out rather, that the constant changing of the formation, as you mentioned there, is that falls at Jose Gomez's feet, surely, because he is the man who has spent the entire summer with, you know, pretty much this team, it's not really been changed very much. And the players that he has brought in, like Miazga and Morrison, are kind of plug and play, just stick him in, very straightforward sort of players. And therefore, for him to get 30 minutes into the first game of the season and have to change his formation, that's a very sort of strange, almost sort of amateurish sort of decision. Because why has it gone so badly? What was wrong with the setup? How did you come to the decision that that was the right setup? And how has it gone so differently from what he thought was going to happen? And, you know, the buck stops with the manager for me there. And it's obviously clear that Gomez doesn't know his best 11. And it's clear that, as you say, there are players like Loader and Barrett. You know, I thought Barrett was a centre mid when he first came through, and now he's found himself on the wing. He's kind of been played in sort of up slightly off the striker and whatnot. When these players don't have their best positions and their role in the team nailed down, and when Gomez doesn't know his best 11, you can either stick with a formation and say, you know, it's not working, but at least it's what we've planned and whatnot, or you can just completely change after 30 minutes and then change again after an hour. You know, get a goal back and then immediately concede because the players don't know what they're doing. It's not a good sign, but in the positivity side of things, this is only the first game in 46. And as you said earlier, this is a young team that is going to have to learn on the job. And in that sense, it's not really a time to panic yet.
No, definitely not. I mean, I think when you're starting young players, you have to expect them to make mistakes or on occasions not be part of games, you know, for a half hour or so. The goalkeeper, again, I think he's a concern at 19, not having an experienced goalkeeper. And I think if you look, and someone said on Radio Barch this week, if you look at the team that finished last season, would you say that was a better side than started this season? And I think there's not a man listening to this show or I spoke to in the pub that would tell me that this side is better than the team that finished the season.
Yeah, so absolutely.
That in itself is a worry. I think you need a strong goalkeeper. And I think from what I've seen of him pre-season, and certainly Sam Walker, I don't rate. I think that is a massive concern. And without a good goalkeeper, you're always going to concede goals because the defence lose faith in them and, you know, it creates problems all over the pitch.
Well, let's hear from what Jose Gomez said after the game and get his comments. And then we'll come back and just spend a little bit of time looking across the Championship, which is something we want to drop into the show and just see if there's anything we can gauge from the first week of the season.
Yeah, I think it was a quite balanced game, no chances for any team. We were better in some moments of the game, but they didn't create chances to score. Some of the goals, it was like they used the mistakes that we did. If we look to all the things that happened during the game, we can say that we were better in some points and we didn't deserve this result. If you look just to the result, maybe you imagine that Sheffield dominate Reading and it wasn't what happened. So, but it's like this, football is like that. We must keep the focus in all our defensive tasks and use properly the offensive situations that we can create. So we must learn with the mistakes that we did, and for sure next game will be completely different.
Well, game one has passed and in the Championship, Westie, just a quick word on how it's looking at the moment, because there's not really too much we can get of at this stage. Obviously Leeds starting well, Cardiff, Fulham and Stoke all losing, probably all certainly were massive favourites in all those games. What's the kind of sense of the league from you this year? Do you feel that it's a strong league, one that the teams with a lot of money are coming into, or, you know, generally speaking, not many teams are spent on transfers too much, and therefore does that you know, make it a bit of an open league?
I think it's very open league this year. I talked to my dad the other day, and I said the teams that have come down from the Premier League our Championship sides, in my opinion, or they are anyways, you know what I'm saying? But they normally, you get one side come down, you think, oh, they're a bit big to be in this league for too long.
Like whereas Newcastle or West Ham. And
yeah, that's them sort of side. You think, well, they've got 2 years in them, they should go straight back up at the most. Whereas you look at Fulham, Huddersfield and Cardiff, and if any of them stay in the Championship for the next 10 years, you wouldn't be surprised, would you? And I think their results have shown they've come into the Championship with some of the problems that a lot of the Premier League teams that have come down in recent years is they've started slowly because they're used to having a side that gets beat every week And we all know that the rigors of the championships is not exactly easy. So not surprised they all got beat on the first day. I think the teams to watch this year will probably be teams like West Brom, who have got a good side and they invest every year. And I think they'd be strong. And obviously Leeds have chucked money at it. And you'd be surprised if they weren't in the top probably four as a minimum.
Yeah, it would be a huge surprise for Leeds. But I'm not part of the team, the sort of brigade that thinks they're destined for the title or whatnot. But I just think that with an open championship, just a basic level of consistency and creativity can get you a long way. And the fact that it was Bristol City as well that they beat, who are probably one of the teams who have invested the most this summer, having also sold a lot of players, it just shows that just that extra little bit that you don't even have to be that good. A player like Pablo Hernandez, who for all intents and purposes wasn't brilliant in the Premier League, towards the end of his career now and completely tears up the Championship, shows just that extra little bit you've got to have, that bit of nous, and well, certainly Reading don't have it at the moment. So we'll hopefully over the course of the season continue to just dip in and out of the Championship and see what's going on to give you something else to listen to as we've kind of rejigged the format. Hopefully some more bells and whistles coming in the next couple of weeks. But for now, we'll move on and jump into the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Right, just the one question for the mailbag this week then, Westy. And it's actually not...
That's a surprise. We lost, Mark.
It is. I think it's almost a sign that people are a bit apathetic towards this, towards the hype has burned out into the embers of the fire, and everyone's just got to wait for something good to happen now. But it's actually not on the game really. It's more focused on the Wickham game coming up on the 14th of August, I believe it is, in the League Cup. And well, basically what's happened is the club have announced that the first 1,000 tickets are going to go on sale on Tuesday, today as we record it, to those with a certain amount of loyalty points and season ticket holders. There's a big problem with Wickham actually printing the tickets, apparently, because there's 1,800 available in total, and apparently they've not even been made yet. So that's kind of why the club have been forced to do it quite late. But we've got a question from Adam, who's asked, do you think the loyalty point system at the club is outdated? The fact that points never expire is going to make it that new fans of the club can never experience a big away day. Not been a huge problem before, but the first tier for Wickham away announced this evening at 4,000 points shows there's a lot at this high bracket now. I fear for Luton away, where 95% of the away end will be of the older generation of Reading fan. I would propose a 3-5-year cut-off point on loyalty points. This would actually show loyalty, question mark. Anyway, will be good to get your opinions. Sorry for the rant. Absolutely no apologies necessary there. But Westy, the loyalty point system has kind of been in place for, God, it's been well over a decade now, it feels. And yeah, and for me, I mean, personally, I kind of disagree with the question, because as someone who hasn't been able to have a season ticket for the past couple of years, purely because of work and life circumstances, means that I have got that bank of loyalty points to rely on. And I'm still personally behind the season ticket holders when it comes to getting on these trips. So I'm still, you know, I still get punished to an extent, and I'm not going to argue too much with that, although I would like it obviously to favour me more, naturally speaking. But I also kind of feel like the loyalty point system at the moment, if we do get into the Premier League, for example, it does kind of reward those fans who were there for the time beforehand.
Well, again, I'm going to be a little bit biased on this point. Like I said earlier in the show, I've been supporting Reading for 35 years, so I've accrued quite a lot of loyalty points. I can understand where he's coming from, but can he really genuinely tell me that he can't get a ticket if he really wanted one? We're not supporting Liverpool, Manchester United. I'm sure if he wanted a ticket, he'd get one to go to watch Wickham away.
He mentions Luton, and I would say that that's a pretty unique circumstance in...
Very unique. So I'm sure he must know someone who's got a lot of loyalty points that could get him a ticket if he really wanted one. I don't see where his argument is. If someone's been supporting the club for 30 years and they go at least to every home match and have done that for 30 years, then are we saying that they shouldn't have a ticket because he wants one? I think that's a bit harsh. But I'm sure if he wants a ticket, he'd get one. I like the system they've done when we was in the Premier League, where you could buy an away season ticket. I thought that really, if the people that want to go away every week, and I know there's a quite a large number of them that do. You're probably looking at between, 500 to 800 people that go away consistently every week.
Might drop down to 150 these days, but yeah, in the Premier League, certainly it's about that.
Yeah, and I think they've done an away season ticket, so you could buy an away season ticket and go to all the games. It was quite a financial pull for you, but I know a few of my mates done it who didn't have a lot of loyalty points that did like going away. So maybe there's that they could put that system in place, because I know that a lot of people that probably have got that 4,000 mark are older fans that only normally go to home games and the odd away match now and again to a local match like Wickham. So yeah, I don't see there's an issue with it. I can understand his thoughts if I was a younger fan, I think the same thing. But then I was a younger fan once and I didn't get every ticket I wanted, so it's just the way it works.
It is, and I don't want to be too much like the club is right sort of mentality, but ultimately it's difficult, and other clubs have it where, you know, you go and with your ticket stubs from 8 previous away games or something, and then they'll let you buy a ticket or whatnot, and I don't think that is really the best way of doing it. I think ultimately...
Because you haven't got the demand, have we, Mark? You just haven't got the demand. I mean, I know a lot of people go away, but do you say we fill our end everywhere we go? We certainly don't. So until that happens, as it does at massive clubs, then why would they change it? I think it was maybe 12 years ago that we complained there was no loyalty system, and now that there's a loyalty system that doesn't work properly.
I remember filling out a paper form in the ticket office before I got my half season ticket in the 05-06 season. Such was the sort of haphazard, like, oh crap, we need a system sort of mentality that the club had.
Yeah, no, so you can't win either way, but I think the system they've got at the moment works, and I think it genuinely only doesn't work when we play someone really local that a lot of people are going to want to go to.
Yeah, and even the teams like Fulham and whatnot do have a pretty chunky away end these days to facilitate us. And Luton, you know, it's a nice one for the new season, but I think in 2-3 years' time, if we're still in the same league, we probably wouldn't even sell it out on a Tuesday night. So that's how it is. We'll go on. Of course, anyone who wants to get in touch with the show on Facebook and Twitter, please do so. Any more thoughts on this topic, any game, why not? There's also the email as well, thetarlessend@gmail.com. We're going to move on now to thinking about transfers and news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So as we're recording this, lunchtime on Tuesday, just checking the club Twitter. No, we haven't signed anyone, but we are supposedly right on the verge of 2 or even 3 additions to the team before Thursday's deadline. To rattle through those, it's Lucas Yao, the Sheffield Wednesday striker, who is supposedly going to cost us £5 million. That is going to have a theory of Michael Hector's sell-on clause that Sheffield Wednesday are going to pay. You know, obviously Chelsea, former Reading player, will get a couple million, supposedly, and then we'll pay it in instalments, is supposedly how that's going to work. And then there's also the Brazilian goalkeeper, Rafael, and the Monaco midfielder, Pele. So Lucas Yao, let's start off with that one then, Westy. £5 million. I didn't realise we had £5 million.
No, neither did I, but they seem to pull it out of somewhere. I'm guessing since the wages dropped down by some of the big earners leaving, that maybe they have sorted out their financial fair play problems. But £5 million seems a lot. I thought he was coming here on loan with a hefty loan fee agreed. But, hey, we'll see. From what I see of him on Saturday, looks like he can hold a ball up. He's got a trick. Not particularly lightning quick, but he's certainly better than what we've got up front, and I think it'd be a welcome addition.
Well, for that sort of money, I think Jose Gomez has to be 100% confident that he's the kind of missing piece in the jigsaw. If he's the man who can hold the ball up, and kind of like Nelson Oliveira did last season, and help his teammates in that sense, and also, crucially, can finish in the penalty box, then, you know, £5 million, if that's split over the next 5 years or what have you, and if it's manoeuvred to fit FFP in whatever way, then it's just going to have to be the pill to swallow to get us in, you know, past the dotted line and stay in the league. Because if we don't spend it, and in theoretically, if we would have had it and not spent it and gone down, then what's the point? So that's meant to be happening today, at least.
Sorry, Mark. He's a good age as well. I think he's 25, is he?
Yeah.
He's got good championship experience. I think he's got a 1-in-4 goal ratio, but I'm not sure how many games he's actually started. Again, what I see of him on Saturday, he certainly would add a different dimension to our attack where he can hold the ball. He has got a trick. And I think it'd be a good addition.
Yeah, supposedly starts most or comes off the bench a lot of the times, Sheffield Wednesday. So giving him a few starts might actually help him to improve, because he got 10 goals last season, and ultimately for that sort of money, he needs to get more than that for Reading. The goalkeeper, Raphael, coming from Sampdoria as a free transfer, he's had his Sampdoria contract cancelled. The move should be done soon. He was basically their reserve goalkeeper last year. He's also been the reserve for Napoli, had a couple Brazil caps a few years ago. From what I understand, he basically played in the Coppa Italia for Sampdoria last season, had a nightmare against AC Milan, so fell out with the fans, off he went sort of thing. 29, I think he is, Westy, and with our goalkeeping situation at the moment, it'd be nice if we didn't have to go back into the market. I don't think we're really paying anything for Yao Virginia anyway. So, you know, I can't argue.
No, we can't argue. And at 29 is a good age for a goalkeeper. To be at a club like Sampdoria, he's obviously got some pedigree. We've seen goalkeepers before play at high levels. I mean, you won't remember him, but remember Jim Leighton making a load of blunders at Manchester United and coming down to Reading and being, wow, he was a different class. So if he can get anywhere near that sort of level, then we'll be pleased to have him. And like we say, the two goalkeepers we've got are weak, so they're a worry.
Yeah, and central midfielder Pele, not the obviously the king of the soccer field, Pele, but the one who was on loan at Nottingham Forest last season, cost Monaco almost £10 million last year.
Wow.
Supposedly a bit of a defence midfielder. I'm going to profess I don't know too much about him. He was at Forest last year, but they were shambles for the 6 months he was there, so I'm not going to count that too much. But another body in the middle, supposedly someone who offers something a bit different as well, hopefully can fit into our style of play.
Yeah, I mean, Reading are looking for that sort of player. I said it on Saturday. If you look, you need someone to break up the play, especially if Charlie Adams is going to have a lot of games. You want someone to give him the ball, basically. And if he can do that, then, again, a welcome addition. And different to what we've got, which we're only improved the squad.
And if you thought we knew nothing about those players, then we know absolutely jack all about Lucas Boye, who is the Torino winger we've loaned in, an Argentine youngster. I'm not going to profess to know anything about him. I think we're just going to have to wait and see how much and how much of an impact, you know, how much he plays and how much of an impact he has.
Yeah, again, I think they call him the Bull, don't they? Is his nickname. So we just judging by that, we know what to expect. I said it's not Bull in a China shop. We'll see. But again, good age. Got a trick from what I've heard and seen of him. And again, with the fact that we're trying to offload a lot of our sort of forward-thinking players, or we have done, he certainly will add to that squad. And judging by Barrett and Loder's performance on the wings, I think he'll probably be straight as a starter.
Yeah, well, some players who have moved on from the club in the past couple of weeks. David Myler's been released. Sam Smith has gone to Cambridge on loan. Luke Southwood, the academy goalkeeper, has gone to Hamilton Academical on loan. And the young academy keeper, Adam Desbois, has left for Brighton. So an interesting move there for whatever reason it's taken place. Deadline down Thursday then, Westy. With these sort of players, presuming these three that we're currently getting over the line all get over the line, might be a pretty quiet day all of a sudden.
It could be. I think it has been in previous years as well. We've been sat by the telly and nothing's happened. I think if this is the three players that they're getting in, then good, they're getting it done nice and early. I think sometimes it's a bit, if you're leaving it till Thursday, it's because you've run out of options or your first choices have gone elsewhere. So it's probably a good thing if they've done it and it gets done today. At least we'll know where we stand then, and we can sort of crack on with the rest of the season now and what we've got at our disposal.
Yeah, I must admit I'm a bit of a fan of the fact that the transfer window ends at this stage of season. Dragging it all the way to September just, you know, creates so much uncertainty and doesn't necessarily favour us as a championship team.
I think my only concern, Mark, is the fact that they're all coming from sort of, I know the midfielder Pele's played for Forest, but they're coming from other leagues. And I've said before in the past that it worries me sometimes, because sometimes it takes them a good year to feel their way through the championship, because as we all know, it's not an easy league to play in week in, week out.
No, well, as we just mentioned, the fact that these players all seem to be physically pretty decent is a good sign at the very least. And speaking of good signs, to round off News Bites, the club last week announced that they're putting on free coach travel to the 15 furthest away games. So, Westy, if you want to get up to Middlesbrough later in the season than free coach travel, which is, you know, as far as I'm aware, a very nice gesture for the club to put on, and also the sort of thing that our Chinese owners can spend money on without really being part of FFP, because they're basically just paying staff for the amount of people that go on coaches. So it's a nice gesture and one that shows the owners are keeping an eye on things.
I think it's an absolutely amazing thing to do. No, I think we can all thank them as fans for making what is sometimes a financially expensive day out a little bit easier. So well done to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll have our first free coach trip up to Hull on Saturday, and that's where our big game preview is going to be focused on. For those who didn't catch the season preview show, there is going to be no weekend preview show this week, or this year, as Ollie has got other commitments to deal with. So we'll flesh out the game preview and work out what's going to happen at Hull next.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
It is the Titanic clash of 19th and 24th on Saturday. Yes, that is two teams who have 0 points from one game. And let's throw away the table because it's no longer important to us, or it won't be for a few weeks anyway. Hull it is. And Reading on the road, certainly can't remember too many times we've gone to Hull and done too well, Westy. But this Hull team is absolutely there to be got at.
Okay, yeah, so obviously not a great finish to last year for Hull. Much the same as ourself. Bit of a mixed bag in general with Hull, but again, we say it all the time, the Championship games, anything can happen. They're at home. And I think after losing their first game of the season, they'll be looking at Reading as an easy 3 points, I think.
Yeah, they're very much in a similar position to ourselves. If you look at the starting 11s, there's some reasonable amount of quality in there on its day, but as a very thin squad and the benches don't have too many familiar faces on it. Do we consider these guys proper relegation rivals then? Is this a big litmus test for the first couple of months of the season at least?
Well, I think it's important we get some out of it, that's for certain. Just by your first defeat, 3-1 at home, you've got to get some out of your away games. I think we'll be happy if we get a point on the board as a minimum. But again, Hull's the sort of side that if you want to get sort of in the top echelons of the league, then you really need to get somewhat against them. And a win would be great for everybody concerned.
Well, Hull against Swansea lost 2-1 last time out. Kind of switched between a 4-4-1-1 and a 4-2-3-1 formation. They got dangerous wingers. We certainly know what Grzycki can do after he scored against us last year. This one, Westy, I'm tempted to play it safe and say in prediction terms, just to remind everyone in terms of the prediction league, our first week last season, everyone got it wrong. So basically, may as well have not bothered. So this week, Hull away, we should get some more varied results and certainly less optimism. I'm tempted just to drop a 0-0 on this.
Ooh, I was going to go for a draw as well, but more with me heart than my head. I think we'll go away and struggle, to be fair, but we'll see. And we've got no idea what sort of team we're going to put out on a Saturday, so we're predicting sort of blindly. So I'm going to go for a 1-1.
Yeah, I'm going to stick my 0-0 for now, but if I do change it beforehand, I will get it vetted by some of the other lads in the prediction league, so we'll get that double check. So this show will return. Plan is for next Monday. I know Monday is kind of the plan for every week, and it's not filled out this week, but c'est la vie. And yeah, next Monday we should be back with the next episode. So thank you very much for popping on this Tuesday, Westy.
Always my pleasure.
And we'll be back next week with a review of a game that really could be one of, you know, when we look back in next May and we look back on the whole game, it could be that moment where we think, actually, we weren't very good. Or actually, maybe we did have something. It could be a good litmus test for the rest of the season. Please join us then. Thank you for listening and come on your R's.
you smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail.